Welcome to Walmart Broadcast. I am speaking with Susan King. How are you, Susan?
I'm awesome.
And returning to the chair, like never before, like a, what's a really fast animal in the desert?
Ooh. Cheetah.
A cheetah.
I was going to say cheetah.
Chris Cooley. How are you, Chris?
Oh, I am fine.
Great. Welcome back to the show, to both of you. We did not
Thank
play
you.
The music because the clip I had stunk, and I just decided, let's not play the music. But moving forward, I think we'll go back to that. It kind of sets the mood, I think. You know?
So, it does.
So this Indeed. Is going to be a Beatlemania episode. This is about Miss Beatle. It's all Miss Beatle all the time. As we know, Charlotte Stewart, a friend of the show, a great interview, and this I think is a great example of how beloved and how wonderful her character was written into the show. Wouldn't you guys kind of agree? What do you guys think about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Wouldn't have been a little house without Miss Beatle.
Yeah, and Four Eyes. Come on, I mean,
Harry.
You both wear glasses, right?
Oh yes,
yes,
so
me too.
All three of us are
I wear
Four
trifocals.
Eyes. Trifocals.
Third.
I do.
Yeah.
I told you I was an old woman. I wasn't kidding.
I'm doing quad focals. So
yeah, I'm almost to the bifocal point myself.
You know, it's funny, as I get older, I tend to look over my glasses more and more. But I also are getting, my glasses are getting smaller and smaller. So, So anyway, so what we're going to learn in this clip is kind of what's going on in Walnut Grove right now. And we're in the school, and we're listening to some of the warm chattering of children.
Louie and I are going to be very rich because we get 10 cents for every A and a nickel for every B. And I got all B's. That's 25 cents. But I'm going to get even more because I got the best grades in the whole school.
My pa says that grades aren't everything, Nellie. It's the learning that counts. Even eggs get graded.
Oh, snap.
And she doesn't waste any time. I mean, those credits have barely cleared the screen. And here comes Nellie in the schoolyard and just, boom, it's just, we get Nellie at her little finest bitchery.
I'm surprised they didn't throw in a type of thing where, no, grades aren't everything. Money is everything, you know?
That would have been very Olsen-ish.
Yeah, it would have been, well, my ma says, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
So we see Miss Beatle in the class, and I think this is the first time we're really kind of focusing in on Miss Beatle. By the way, this I might have mentioned before, the episode is Four Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Do you guys
episode
happen to
four
know?
Eyes.
That, yeah, do you guys have any input on the episode? Like, you know, the release date or anything like that?
It's,
I do. I have that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Season 2, episode 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is episode 2 in the second season?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So 1975 was when this aired.
Yes. And I was doing a little bit of digging, and I found it interesting because I'm so prejudiced. I always think that Little House was just number one, number one, number one. And actually, season 2 was not even in the top 30 programs.
I found that
of
surprising.
1975. I found it surprising, too, and maybe I need to dig a little bit deeper, but the info I had was that the highest ranking season they had was season 4, and it was number 7.
I really
and
find,
so,
I mean,
it's very good, though. I mean,
but you know, they had covers of the TV Guide. You know, this show was considered beloved by so many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what it was competing with. Chris would probably know that much better than I would. 1975 television, were we still watching All in the Family? And
right?
Yeah.
This was when they had this on Wednesday night. I was under the impression it was on a Monday night throughout its nearly its entire run. But evidently on season two, they put it on Wednesday nights, and it was up against really forgotten. No, I'm not going to say that. It was up against TV shows that people do not remember because they were so short-lived until mid-season where they put it up against Bionic Woman and then in the spring.
So, you know, there's a podcast that touches upon all of these forgotten shows that you're talking about that you should really check out.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's called Forgotten TV. And you can actually go to forgotten.tv. Oh, wait, that's your podcast, Chris.
I thought I heard that song.
Strange.
That.
Three shows just looking tonight at the TV schedule from was on up against Little House. But really, they had nothing. Little House was, in the fall when this was on, by far the best thing on. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, like I said, late winter, mid-season, when they started to put Bionic Woman and then the ABC decided they needed to have something a bit better on than and that's when they did those when they would inject Wonder Woman and different shows in mm-hmm. to compete with what else was on the air. So this was on 7 p.m. Central and should have done very well in the time slot. For a long time, this was one of NBC's only hit shows.
Right. Like, right. It was. He's absolutely correct.
I mean, that was one of the big things when Silverman went to NBC in the late 70s that he had to fight against all the hit shows that ABC had with Happy Days and, you know, the Bionic People and all of that. So this was one of their hits.
Which is such a weird comparison, right? Like, we have Bionic People, you know, the Bionic Men, the Bionic Woman. What else did they must have had other things like that. The Hulk? Was that on at that time? That might have been later in the 70s.
A little early for the Hulk, but certainly but, later on.
Yeah, and it's like that's what they're going to compete against. And it's like we have a little melodrama about a girl with blue eyes who can't see very well.
You know, this is Mary Tyler Moore was still on the air. Bob Newhart, MASH, all of Sanford and Son was all still first run television. So none of on ABC. Well, Sanford and Son was. Sanford
CBS,
and Son.
CBS, I think, for those, right?
CBS was MASH and the Jeffersons, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart. Mm-hmm.
Such a strange show to have in, surrounded by all that, But anyway,
absolutely.
So
it's a period show. So I mean, people didn't have to watch anything modern. Into Little House on the Prairie and get some old time values.
So here we are. One of Susan's clips. Actually, no, this is both of your clips. where we talk about it's a combination of clips. Actually, no, it isn't. I'm becoming dyslexic looking at everyone's clips. Mary is pretending to be sick here, and. We're not really sure 100% why yet, because if you're new to Little House, maybe you don't know what's going to happen to Mary later on in life. But I think a lot of people who revisit the show not out of, completely out of order, might be thinking that Mary's about to lose her vision completely. I remember the first time I watched this after a really long hiatus from the show, and I was like, oh, is this how she lost her vision? I thought it was scarlet fever. But
yeah, and actually it wasn't scarlet fever. It's so interesting how the history of the Ingalls family keeps being researched and discussed. Even in the last couple of months on the internet, they're saying from all of the private paperwork of the real Ingalls family, of notes that Laura, letters that Laura wrote to Mary, that it was really some type of spinal infection, that it wasn't scarlet fever at all, even though the TV show, that's what the history says, but according to the real family, it wasn't scarlet fever.
I'm going to go by the TV show.
Sorry. I know you will. Almanzo.
I find them more believable. Thanks. But here's that clip.
Mary? Come on, you're going to be late for school. Hey, it's late. What are you doing in bed? This race, you're not going to be at school in time for recess.
I feel like going to day, Pa.
What's the matter?
My it hurts.
Guess you don't seem to have any fever. Maybe you just need some breakfast.
Ernest, Pa, I don't feel very good.
All right, you stay in bed.
I don't feel very well.
Your mom
fixes
some to eat when you feel hungry.
And because Mary lied, that's why she went blind.
Oh, no.
That's what Jesus does. He punishes. Stop. I thought that's what I read somewhere. It's true.
That's another conversation.
So we're going to go to one of Chris's side jokes that went, I think, over Susan's head earlier tonight. So here we go.
Yeah.
This is Carolyn versus Mrs. Olson. And I'm always going to side with Mrs. Olson. Sorry. It's just business, ladies.
Now I get it.
I think these double yolks merit an extra one penny a dozen, Mrs. Ingalls.
Well, thank you. That's very nice, Mrs. Olson.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I always feel that merit deserves a reward. That's always been a policy in our household ever since the beginning, even with the children.
Yes, Laura told me. I've never believed in paying children for grades. Grades are a reward in themselves.
It must be working. Willie got very good grades, and Nellie got the best grades in the school. How did your Mary do this time?
We're proud of our children, no matter what their grades are. The girls do a lot of work around the farm. That's part of learning, too.
Well, I suppose. Of course, I believe that it's more important that the true scholar have that time to develop the mind. And the annual history award is coming up now. Don't you think that's important?
You need it. I just credit you to my account. Thank you. Good day, Mrs. Olson.
Funny how these things aren't so important to Caroline when her kids aren't doing well.
Well, what kills me about that whole scene is you can Harriet just set that up. Well, I'm going to give her an extra penny so I can talk about merit, so I can talk about my kids' good grades, so I can talk about how lousy your daughter's doing. I mean, just so typical Harriet, but just, oh, man. Just set her up.
I thought it was great.
And Carolyn had that good jab at the end.
Oh, I loved it. If you need it.
She said it almost under her breath. And I missed it the first time. The second time I watched the scene, it's like, oh, that's what she muttered when she left.
So here we are. We're starting to discover that Mary is... something's up with Mary's eyes, right? We're still not sure. But we're just pretty sure that she's a terrible student all of a sudden. So we're kind of questioning, like, what's going on? So Charles discovers her up late at night. And, I don't know. So she's up doing her homework. And here we go. It's a little dialogue that gets, as Chris put, very melodramatic. And, it is at one point just kind of hilariously melodramatic, but,
So you had 15 minutes of homework. That was an hour ago.
These problems are just taking longer than I thought. Sorry. I didn't mean to wake you.
Never mind that. You ought to be in bed.
Please, Pa. I just have to finish this time.
Look, Mary, I know how much this means to you, but there's such a thing as studying too hard. I've never been accused of it myself, but if you work too long, you get too tired.
Tooting his own horn, by the way, right there. I can stack the seed, all that kind of stuff. Right? I mean, she always takes opportunity, I'm the best.
You'll end up sitting looking at those problems all night, never find any answers.
It's just this one problem. I can solve it in a minute. I know I can.
Yeah, Miss Beetle will have a sleepyhead in school tomorrow. Here, let me see it. Not as good arithmetic as your mom, but I can usually find the answer. Here you go. You just got two numbers with first cents off. There, see?
Uh-oh, she's squinting.
Mm-hmm.
She stands up.
Oh, yes. I see it now.
But you couldn't see it from your chair, could you?
I saw it just fine, Pa.
She's blind, is what I'm saying. She's blind.
She got two numbers reversed. She's dyslexic as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Dyslexia.
See, I was wondering if maybe that's where we were going with this. Well, I mean, I really wasn't thinking that, but I'm imagining that that's what people might have been thinking. Like, it's maybe it's not bad eyesight. Maybe it's dyslexia. Right. That was like a big thing in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a big thing now. I mean, I'm just saying that the attention made towards it was...
Did we have a dyslexia episode of Little House?
No.
No. No. We had deaf. We had children hobbling with right. uneven legs. We had stutterers.
The fat kid who would run.
Right.
My solution is to run.
There was other
I'm sorry, what?
There was definitely other episodes of shows, very special episode, where, you know, a character would have, or it was a friend. This friend doesn't do well in school. They find out the reason. It's one of those, you know.
Yeah, very special episodes.
Very special episodes.
Well, I do think they make that scene kind of baba, almost like she's been diagnosed with cancer or something. But for me, when I look at it, as children have their identities and families, Mary's whole identity is the good student.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, to her, it was like, wow, all of a sudden. And I don't know, maybe, she seemed to go back and forth. She didn't want to admit that she couldn't see well. And then when she got her glasses, you know, well, I'm spoiler alerting. I'm going to be quiet.
Yeah. But it's needless to say, it's hilarious what the students do.
Yeah. When we get to it, she had legitimate concerns of the period. So,
yeah, I would say so.
You come over here to read it.
I saw them, Pa.
Go stand over by your chair.
I thought he was going to yell at her. Mary! He's writing it with such, like, with such attitude. Like, he's like, I'm going to break this girl. I'm going to make her cry.
What numbers did I write on the slate?
Solutions glasses, you know, it's like not that big of a deal.
I know that music was rivaling some of that cuckoo music in the My Ellen episode. I mean, wow, they went way over the top on that.
Yeah. And Charles is like, oh great, these things are gonna cost like $8.
Yeah. And I mean, almost a week they were gone.
Yeah,
because Mankato, they were 80 miles away, so
right.
Was it a 3-day wagon ride? By the time, and they had to camp out. It was a big deal.
Well, you know, when they do the eye exam, the thing is very intimidating looking. I mean, if you're just like some country bumpkin, and they kind of are. They
what
go
is
in
this?
There and, yeah, this is a. Right. What do you mean? I'm going to put my face on this
from the devil?
Right. Right. Well, and you remember when she, in the episodes where she finally does go blind and Charles is like, would you mind if I stayed in here? We don't get to see equipment like this very often, you know. So,
can we get a refund on those glasses? I think I heard him muttering that or something on the, you know, behind the scenes.
You can still buy antique. I mean, there's surviving antique optometry.
Sure.
Like this, and it's very accurate. So, I mean, it to me, it looks like they probably found an antique one and integrated it into the show as a prop because
yeah,
I don't built that.
Charles was probably going to like an antique like auction, and he's like, you know what? If we bought this, we can do a whole show around this. Because, you know, it is kind of weird that they would have an episode like this knowing that the character is going to become blind in the future. Right?
Well, but I guess this is the beginning of the beginning. Her eyes are starting to weaken and her sight is becoming compromised. So I would have rather had them done it like this than all of a sudden, boom, she wakes up one day and, you know, she can't see. So we're kind of getting here it goes. It's, you know, going to start and progressively get, you know, worse and worse and worse.
So like really? You said, she goes to Mankato, right? And gets the test, gets the glasses. Actually, I wanted to play a clip from the doctor because I'm just kind of curious if this guy was, if they might even be able to sue this guy. Because he says words that would really be, considered libelous.
Mr. Ingalls, you'll be happy to know Mary has nothing wrong with her eyes. A simple pair of glasses won't correct.
Hold on.
Wait a minute.
Because I think he just said the solution to all of her problems with vision are held in those glasses.
Yep, that's what I heard.
That would really make me angry.
Well, even in the episode where she does go blind the first time she's there, oh, it's just eye strain. And then, you know, she comes back the second time and it's like, I didn't know your daughter had scarlet fever. And, you know,
I wonder then the whole story
changes.
It's not the same doctor, right? I wonder. I have to look into that.
Yeah. No. I think the first time she saw him, it was, and then he was sick or something. I don't know.
Mary, you're back.
I think this is the only time. The optometrist was Ford Rainey, who was old character actor from the 50s westerns. And I mean, he was on everything in television. I mean, he was on The Outer Limits, and he was the president on Lost in Space.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Wow. I thought he looked familiar to me.
He was in everything.
Wow. So like I said, all of us wear glasses. And I've worn glasses to read them one way or another since I was probably 14 or 15. Probably when I was 20, I started wearing them all the time. Have you ever heard of this to be true? All right, I'm just going to play this little clip.
To wear your glasses all the time, for a month anyway, until the eye muscles have had a chance to regain their strength.
That. It's nonsense, right? I mean, it's not like your eyes get better. They get worse.
Yeah, pretty much.
In your experiences, have you ever heard of this? You know, where your eyes, you know, need time to relax or something? I mean, I guess maybe if you have a headache or something, maybe?
I know that there's eye exercises that you can do.
I don't believe they're actually helping.
No.
I don't believe, anyway. That's some Alex Jones stuff right there.
she got some really interesting-looking glasses there.
Yeah, I think they were once worn by H.G. Wells.
Yeah, they look like it. Susan, did you take a look at what types of glasses those were?
Actually, I didn't research her specific type of glasses, but you know, since we're talking about eyewear, I did do research on glasses, and goodness, the history is just cuckoo, that apparently they were using magnifying technology as early as 4 BC with like water-filled objects to magnify. I mean, I went back. And then, thanks to, and it's real speculative about certain aspects of the history of glasses / spectacles, but as early as 1286 in Italy, they are given credit for, and that the first glasses were like in the shape of a Y, and they had a little lens on the end of each one, and you just kind of held them up to your face. Mm-hmm. And then they developed ones that pinched on your nose, but the kind that Mary is wearing, supposedly, the over-the-ears variety were invented in 1727 by a gentleman named Edward Scarlett in England. So there's all kinds of real, and then of course Benjamin Franklin supposedly, collectively seems to be believed that he invented the bifocal.
Right, I've heard that.
So, yeah. to correct his stigmatisms and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the history of Glass. I was just like, are you serious?
Well,
I
in the movie,
had no idea how far it went back.
In that movie, The Jerk, you know, they have that holder in the
middle. The OptiGrab.
Yeah, OptiGrab. That's excellent. You pulled that right out of your skull right there. Awesome.
Let me just grab my welder. Oh my God. That's classic. That's classic, right?
I
there.
Love that movie.
Everybody had the crossed eyes because they were looking at the OptiGrab.
As a kid, I was rolling with that movie.
Have to.
Incredible movie. All right.
So, but the glasses that she got were actually antique writing temple eyeglasses, and they were not available in the year that this was actually set.
Really?
What the?
Because the temples that the types of glasses that she got, which looked very, very similar to John Boy's glasses, with the same the same circular over the ear design, that was not a thing until the earliest 1880.
Really? Wow.
Steel. Yeah, they had to invent spring steel first to make it have that loop, and that was state of the art then. So, I mean, like from the 1880 to 1890, that was a state-of-the-art glasses with the circle around the ears. And they were called riding glasses because those were what you wore when you were riding your horse. Otherwise, your glasses would fall off.
Oh, riding. Oh, I thought you meant riding, like you're riding because maybe your head is down. So, they don't slip off.
The glasses that we're seeing in the show are probably more like 20, 25 years in the future.
Oh, wow. Well, your information is a lot more correct than mine then. Yeah, wow. Okay.
That's a stick sort of design that just went straight back. And they had various designs on the end, like had a little loop and things. And then what you were saying was the women that would hold up those lenses to their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, I mean, women did not want to wear eyeglasses.
Right.
In the 18th century. I mean, they were for old women and people that were infirm. This was definitely a concern. That's why that stick with the glasses was developed. It was called the lorgnette. I think it's a French name. But it's like those, you know, the woman at the opera with the glasses on.
Right.
That's the lorgnette. And that's when, you know, they would hold that up. And you've seen that in movies where the woman holds that up to her eyes. Oh, I see.
Yeah. Next to the guy with the monocle.
She didn't
right
face all the time. And that was a legit thing.
Wow, that's really interesting, man. Well, Beautiful Mary got these riding glasses, as you said. Mm-hmm. And she goes to school, and I don't know, I think that it couldn't have gone better. So here's a clip from her coming to school.
Well, look at Miss Four Eyes. Mary has four eyes, four eyes.
You be quiet, Willie.
Well, Mary has four eyes. Two real ones and two glass ones. Four eyes.
And you're going to have two black ones.
It's all right, Laura. Never mind.
My mother said your pa took you to Mankato to get glasses, but I never thought you'd have the nerve to wear them.
What do you mean, Nellie?
Oh, nothing. Just I would never wear the ugly things.
Miss Beetle wears glasses, and she's not ugly.
She doesn't have a husband, either. And Mary's going to be an old spinster, just like Miss Beetle, because no one ever marries a four-eyed.
Well, no one will ever marry you because you say such nasty things.
Come on, Laura, let's go inside.
We're really getting personal here.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's just, ooh!
It's like, wow.
It's just vicious. She's just vicious.
So, actually, did you notice Miss Beetle's glasses? They're similar, right, Chris?
They look like
the wraparound, except they're circles, you know, instead of ovals. And so here we go. We're going to learn that basically everybody has a similar opinion to Nellie's opinion of Mary wearing glasses.
Mary, would you like to take the next one?
Yes, ma'am.
Four eyes, four eyes, four eyes, four eyes, four eyes.
Class!
And it's just, her whole spirit is broken. It's so awful. We've all had moments like this, I'm sure, and it's just, because, you know, I remember this episode even from when I was a kid. And
yes,
it was heartbreaking. You know, I don't know. Poor kid.
And I think it speaks so much to peer pressure, because when I think about the characters of Mary and Laura, Laura was always kind of the little stinker one that she might feel bad about lying, but she would go there. But most of the time, Laura would always have to talk Mary into it, that she always seemed to be the more rigid, obedient. Maybe it's just me. And so for this peer pressure to affect her, I mean, those glasses cost Pa a fortune, for her to lie about losing them, you know, it just kind of really speaks to me. It's like, as much as she was straight up and would never lie to Pa, man, she must have really been, it must have just really affected her badly. Sure. For her just, I'm just going to lie to my dad. And Mary just usually didn't go there.
And it was always the joke where it said, you know, well, she was called a Four Eyes for one day, and then she went and took these glasses and stuck them in the log. And that was
right.
Like, what a, I mean, I can understand the peer pressure thing and not wanting to be bullied and, you know, and stuff like that. This isn't quite bullying, but I guess to today's standards, this is bullying, right? Because words hurt. But I just, I'm sorry, what?
Says that at the end.
Yeah, I kind of forget what he says, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So, I think it's in her head where she's like, I'm not going to be a Four Eyes anymore. I'm going to stick these glasses in a log, and I'm going to say I lost them, and I'll just make my parents pay another God knows how much money. You know, probably paying it off to get these glasses. Pa gets really mad, says, well, I'm probably not even going to be able to get you glasses until harvest.
Right.
So, whatever. Mary's phased a little bit. I guess she's not completely phased. And in her head, I think it's more along the lines of that she'll never get a man. And I think that's what's really, really hitting home for her. Because Miss Beadle doesn't have a man, and Miss Beadle,
or so she thinks.
Yes. Miss Beadle has quite a number of gentlemen callers. So I'm going to play the most inappropriate thing that happened in this schoolhouse since the plague.
Right.
They're necking.
Mm-hmm. Mary.
Miss Blue Eyes.
I just came in to put my flower in some water.
I see you've met Mr. Stacy.
Well, not formally.
Mary Ingalls, this is John Stacy. Mr. Stacy's a lawyer from over in Springfield.
What?
What she isn't telling you is I'm a beau. And she's very lucky that I didn't meet you first, Blue Eyes.
Oh, John.
Inappropriate. Mm-hmm. The girl's like 11.
Right?
Pleased to meet you.
It's my pleasure, Mary.
You know, this could have gone another way, because it's kind of almost the same age difference between Almanzo and Laura. No, I'm kidding. But still, like, I mean, it's just as inappropriate as Laura being in her, you know, Almanzo's nightgown or whatever.
His bathroom.
His bathroom.
Eva, don't keep anyone after school today.
Because I'll be waiting. All right, John. Mary, I'd like to apologize. I didn't know anyone was here.
Is he really your beau? I think he's nice.
So do I.
Miss Beadle? Is it too late for me to take the history exam?
Of course not. We still have 5 minutes before we begin.
So she goes and goes to the log. Luckily, a squirrel didn't eat them or something, and gets her glasses. And she takes the test, and she aces it. You know, she wins the award, right?
Yes, she does.
Which is great. It's just that it's a little superficial that the thing that changed her mind is that Miss Beadle could still hook this guy. we never find out anything about this guy either, right? I don't think he ever returns to the show.
Yeah.
No.
She just kind of moves on with the pig farmer.
You're right. But I didn't remember that he was a lawyer, and it was just like, oh yeah, you know, they had to make him really, you know, he couldn't have just been a regular farmer guy. Oh, he had to be a lawyer, you know, to make it seem that much more, you know. See, you can even hook a lawyer with glasses on.
Would have been funny if he mentioned where he worked, and it was for Mary's what's his name, the other blind guy.
Kendall at the Kendall law firm.
He worked for the Kendall law firm, and then you find out that, you know, later on there was a fire and he died or something. With a baby in the third floor. I don't know. I feel like I'm mashing episodes now. We basically learned that you can still get a man even though you're wearing glasses.
Yes.
And
hope for a single woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm single. There's hope for a single woman.
There you go. That's what Match.com is for.
No.
Back then. Mary is going to kind of come clean here, which, you know, I think in every type of crime, every type of lie, you know, they always kind of come out clean at the end. But here's Mary. Yeah. And, you know, Mary, like you said, Mary's doesn't really do bad things like this often.
Yeah, she really doesn't.
And this is massive. This is, like, the biggest one for her.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can't really think of her doing much worse. Right?
Yeah, I can't either. I'm thinking of the episode where they sold the medicine to get Doc Baker, Laura had to talk her into that one. And
yeah.
I do think, though, this isn't the most feisty she's been. I mean, she's not that feisty here, but when she tells Gil Gerard to get away from her mom.
Yeah.
The handyman. You love my mother, don't you?
Get your handy hands away from my mom!
Well, and you know, as much fun as we might make fun of Melissa Sue Anderson, she, I believe, I could be wrong, but she's the only one out of all of the child actors on Little House that ever won an Emmy. She did not win it for Little House. She did in 1978. She won Best Actor Emmy for an after-school special called Which Mother Is Mine? And Marion Ross played her mother. I don't know how much store anybody takes in awards, but she did win an Emmy. And really, Little House won a couple of awards for cinematography. They won a couple of awards for David Rose's music, as I've mentioned before, but that was it.
Yeah, it was not very well received in the awards community, right? Or as like you're saying, in the ratings community.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those, perhaps their peers didn't respect what they did, but the fans are just still cuckoo.
Right, but it was consistently a solid show. Like, maybe it didn't carry an entire night, but you know, it was definitely something that you couldn't cancel, I guess.
Evidently. Right. I mean, give it a couple more seasons and it was in the, oh, this is our only hit.
Right, like you said.
Yes, that's true. Well,
their only top 30 show was Little House on the Prairie in like 1978, so it eventually did do well.
And what was their, what did NBC have that broke them from this like poor streak of luck?
Fred Silverman, it was a big deal with Fred Silverman being hired over from, well, he worked everywhere, but
Different Strokes.
He was responsible for the green lighting of many of the shows that we remember as, you know, big, you know, favorite late 70s, early 80s shows like The Facts of Life, Different Strokes.
Yes.
I mean, we're all talking about different networks, but I'm trying to remember the some of the stuff. But he was one of the when he moved to NBC, he eventually did develop. I mean, there was some stuttering at the beginning, and what's interesting is that the person that wrote this episode, B.W. Sandifer, who did about 13 episodes of Little House, After this, he was a producer on Cliffhangers, which was a very short-lived show for NBC, but was one of the early attempts for NBC with under Fred Silverman's watch to make a hit show that was something new and different, that was something that would compete against the nostalgia night that they were doing over on ABC with Little House followed, I'm sorry, with Little House, with Happy Days followed by Laverne and Shirley.
Right, you know? Right. We forget that those period, well, they didn't, the they kind of, weird, you know, Happy Days kind of devolved away from being a 50s throwback. Did you get that kind of vibe with it?
It sort of faded. And as they developed, the characters became, it became more about the characters than the period, I think.
Yeah, like it became very, very, there was no more reference to the 50s or 60s. And I mean, when it began, you know, of course, it was very much based in the 50s.
Yes.
Like, what was the movie?
American Graffiti.
Yeah, American Graffiti, you know, of course, was a big part of the launch of that type of, '70s, '50s throwback.
Wow. Oh, very.
Oh, yeah. And when you think that Mork and Mindy derived from Happy Days, I mean, that's just like a really.
For me, that was massive.
The character, yeah, the character Mork, of course, originally was on Happy Days. And it's just like, wow, those two things don't go together at all.
But that's like the fact that Alf was a hit show, you know? It doesn't make sense, but Alf. It somehow worked. Yeah.
Right.
It was, I mean, yeah, Alf was great. It was, I mean, it was a show. It was great because it was on 7 p.m. Central Monday. I mean, you got home, it was a comedy for the whole family.
I loved it, but yeah. I tried watching it recently. I just personally didn't feel as though
it doesn't. Yeah.
Like my kid wouldn't be able to watch that.
And of course we know Max Wright just hated being show. I mean, last episode, We're done. All right. He walks off the set, gets in his car, and drives off.
Goes right to the closest crack house.
I was going to go over there, Mark.
Come on. You saw the photos.
I've seen them.
That guy's a crackhead.
Oh, we have fallen.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
You know, I read an interesting story. You were talking, Christmas, you were talking about B.W. Sandifer, and I was digging through Melissa Sue Anderson's book to see if there was any interesting information about this episode in her book, and really was just a side story where apparently she was friends with his family, and he took her on a skiing trip. And it was the first time she had ever skied, and Michael Landon about scalped him when he found out about it because of the insurance. It's like, are you crazy? You're taking one of the stars of my show on a skiing trip? And according to Melissa Sue Anderson, I mean, as silly as that sounds, she was like, their relationship was never quite the same after that. He just could not believe that he would have been so foolish to put her on gigantic ski slopes when she had never skied before. And felt like she could have gotten killed or seriously injured, and then she wouldn't be able to be on the show. And so he was not a happy Mr. Landon about that. Yeah. So I just, she felt it was significant enough to put in the book. So I was just like, oh, okay.
You know, I have to learn more about Michael Landon. I just feel like I don't know much about the man and the way he is. And these stories I keep hearing about him, how he was and how he was a really demanding kind of individual. Also very protective of the kids, but, sounds like he was maybe, like a James Brown of, producers and directors. You know, we demanded such a high level of effort.
So today we call people like him a showrunner. They didn't really have that in the '70s and eighties, but, typically there's always somebody They're the person that is the spirit of the show, basically. They're the person that gets things done.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he was the showrunner. And I think you have to be a certain type of person to do that, to crank out an hour of a drama every single week on a page. And what were they doing, 24 episodes a year? I mean, it wasn't like today where,
12,
wow.
If you're lucky, right. 12.
Right.
Today, if we got 13 episodes of this, you know. They were cranking out 24, 25 episodes a year, and it was grueling. And I'm sure he, you know, was a hard case to people frequently about things.
I came across these Kodak ads that he did. I don't know if you guys have seen these.
Where he's
basically selling the those old 110 type film cameras.
Yeah.
So he had this other thing going on where, you know, because he grew up on television for the most part, and he was doing Little House, and he still at the same time was setting up these side connections to make even more money. I mean, Michael Landon must have been completely loaded, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I remember watching those commercials because, unfortunately, I'm a lot older than you all are. And so I remember actually watching those commercials. And I have it's a pretty rare book. I don't believe that it's in print anymore, although I saw a couple of used copies of it on Amazon that's very insightful about Michael Landon. It's called Conversations with Michael Landon, and it's this young college kid that just got lucky and established a relationship with Michael Landon, and it's a fascinating book. And even by the things that I've seen by Michael Landon, he was self-admittedly a very insecure man, driven, absolutely. You have to be, as Chris was saying, to pull off, to have the kind of career he did, to pull off, you know, the 24 episodes a season and all of that, but at all that vibrato and all of that control and all of that what have you, really deep down inside, it's almost like, and I don't want to go all Dr. Phil here, but truly, it's almost like even though he was Michael Landon's star in his head in a lot of ways, he was still Oogie, which was his nickname as a kid, Eugene Horowitz.
Right.
And so a lot of that drive. Well, and as we've talked about, I can't remember if it's been in a podcast or if it's been just personally one-on-one over the phone. He, you know, experienced so much trauma as a child. And really, that's what, and Allison even agreed with me when we interviewed her, that Little House, really, he created a family that he wished he had belonged to. And I think that's why it's so enduring for a lot of people. In my childhood, it was 45 minutes of escapism from a pretty chaotic household as a child. And that's why it's still so dear to me to this day. I have a lot of really wonderful memories of being able to escape for 45 minutes in a family where dad was loving and mom was patient and everything was summed up and solved in 45 minutes.
Unless it was a two-parter.
Right.
Which it very often was.
Okay, an hour and, you know, whatever it was with all the commercials.
No, I totally understand where you're coming from. I think Chris agrees too. We all have a special feeling for the show, and
so ironically Michael Landon has the same feeling that we did. He created it, but created it in a lot of ways for the same reason. He wanted to be a member of the Ingalls family as badly as some of us did. Wished that he had, you know, I mean, how much more chaotic a household can you be in with a Jewish dad and a Catholic mother and a Catholic that hates a Jew and a Jew that hates Catholic? I mean, I don't know. God bless him. I mean, he just really had a rough time.
So he made a lot of episodes where he was sweaty and had to take his shirt off. how many times did he break his ribs on this show? Like 84 episodes?
With the perfectly coiffured hair and the perfect tan. Well, actually, the perfect tan.
Yeah, so I'm going to actually play this apology from Mary. And she walks up to Pa, who's nursing a broken rib. He has no shirt on, of course. No, I'm kidding. He sneezed really hard and he broke a rib.
Right.
So here we go.
Hey, Scholar. Let me see that certificate.
I found it strange that she wasn't wearing the glasses. Like, she has to make it like a presentation that she had found the glasses.
It's a reveal.
Like, wouldn't you want to say, I found my glasses, and this is all this good news, and I lied? Right? It would kind of soften the blow.
Right.
That's pretty impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You don't look too happy for somebody who just won an award.
She goes into her pocket, pulls them out.
Didn't lose him, Pop. I hid him in an old lock. I wouldn't have to wear him. Billy kept calling me Four Eyes. I'm sorry I lied.
I kind of thought it was something like that.
Yeah, right.
Ah, oh, come here.
Pour on the tears.
I know you didn't want to lie. That old saying isn't true, is it, about sticks and stones? Names do hurt.
They sure do.
I know they do.
They don't.
But you got the certificate. So no more tears, all right?
All right.
I think we ought to take it home and show your ma. If you keep going the way you are, you're going to be as good a teacher as Miss Beadle.
That's right, Pa. Just like Miss Beadle.
Come on.
So no punishment, by the way. Right? What is that? You know, what kind of lesson is learned here?
Well, maybe he, like a lot of episodes, he felt like her punishment was in all the, you know, mental anguish from all the teasing. I guess okay, I'm just saying.
I mean, even...
I'm trying to think like Charles Ingalls.
When Laura didn't write the whole essay and she just memorized it from her head, she had to go and confront the teacher and be...
That's true.
What does Mary get? A pass.
Well, but Pa doesn't love Mary as much as he does.
Why does he give her a pass? He says it right here. Because he got the award.
Yes. Well, I was gonna be. Yeah. So we have a different lesson theme than what Carolyn was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grades aren't everything. We're proud of our children even no matter what they do.
Right.
We do a lot work around the farm, and at the end it's, well, you got your certificate, let's go show your ma.
Oh, you won, so in that case forget all what I said.
Is learning its own reward, or is it the great
no reward? But getting revenge with the Olsons is.
Okay, that would have been good.
Yeah, let's go shove it under Nellie's nose.
Right.
Yeah,
she's not getting her dollar.
She just threw that money away, and I can't even.
It's still in her dresser in the dresser drawer.
I'm disgusted at this episode.
All of Harriet's loose bills.
Right.
Every time she wants to do something crazy, so the dresser drawer comes out. All that money's in there.
That's right. All that cash.
Got to go invest in the stock.
Oh, I loved it. But all right, guys. Thank you very much for getting together this episode of Walnut Grove Cast. That's another one in the can.
Yes.
It's where this one belongs. No, I'm kidding.
Stop.
No, I thought it was really good.
I think
this is the first time that we've had more than two people on. Oh, no. Well, we did a couple interviews, but it's not the same. But yeah, I mean, I think this did well. Hopefully you guys would like to, you know, do this again.
Thought it was great. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
We got to choose a two-parter. Those are fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, all right, guys. Well, thank you very much. You can hear more from Chris Cooley at Forgotten.tv. Check out his podcast, Forgotten TV. It's an excellent, excellent, discussion. And, I'm going to say pretty much an education on late 70s and 80s TV. Do you touch upon the 90s, or are you going to?
I've determined Forgotten TV era is 1970 to 1989. Anything after that is too recent.
What about 1990? Summer of 1990.
It's a different show.
Doesn't fit into my demographic.
Yeah, we just did Saturday morning TV. I did it with my nephew, Tommy.
I gotta listen to that because I downloaded it. Oh, I just haven't
too.
Had a chance.
Two episodes because it's one of those things. I think I'm gonna get done. You know, I'm gonna. Oh yeah, I'll knock this out. But there's just so much. Oh, and this. Yeah. And before you know it, it's okay. This is going to be an hour and 20 minutes if I try to do this. So it ended up being two episodes. But he just has some of the, you know, these spontaneous sayings that children of today have. And
well, he's nine, right?
Yes.
Yeah, my kid is nine, and they're nuts. That,
you know, so something I would have watched when I was even younger. You know, this is what we watched, and you know, to get a modern take on some of these crazy things, and it's weird shows already, so it's not like
you know what I think. You know what, listen to your show with my kid, see what he thinks of it.
No, okay.
That'll make that, you know, it'll be like another 9-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's awesome, man.
Oh, I'm gonna have to listen to that. That sounds awesome.
And
absolutely,
I'm putting some work on and on the odd. Period of shows, a whole like chapter of shows that we're going to do probably a 6-part episode of the entire history of the Manson drama, like the Charles Manson, from his beginnings to everything else and up until current times,
from Charles Ingalls to Charles Manson.
Yes.
Covering everything. There's a song in that somewhere.
But that's on the odd, if anybody wants to listen to kind of strange, weird stuff. And Susan King, you're not doing a show right now. You're just 100% Walnut Grove cast, right?
I'm all about the Walnut Grove cast. Absolutely. All about.
Well, there you go. All there's nothing it. Wrong with that either.
Nope.
Quite a bit about it, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are blessed to have you.
Oh, I'm blessed to be here. Mm-hmm. When I think back that my girlfriend and I talk about this all the time about, can you believe I'm doing a podcast? Because it's like something fantasy. You see somebody on TV and wouldn't it be great to do that? It's just like, I listen to this podcast and here I am doing it. Now, I mean, it's just like totally just unbelievable to me. Still, I think I really am doing this. Wow. It's just awesome.
Yeah. I get the same vibe with a lot of people. It's, you know, you listen to these people's work and all of a sudden you're talking with them and it's pretty cool, you know?
Yes. I can't believe I didn't wear out my phone listening to Meet Me at the Fair. I mean, I listen to it like every other day. I just love it.
You should do a commentary on the episode.
That's better.
There you go. But all right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time out to do this. And I guess I'll catch you guys next time.
All righty.
All right.